I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome back to Radio Times. It took till the early morning for Donald Trump to defeat Hillary Clinton in Pennsylvania, considered a battleground and bellwether state this election season. While she won big in Philadelphia and did well in the collar counties around the city, it was not enough to overcome the groundswell of support for Trump in the western part of the state, the so-called Rust Belt. The last time a Republican presidential candidate won Pennsylvania was back in 1988. Republican Senator Pat Toomey beat his challenger, Katie McGinty, and I read that every woman running in Pennsylvania for Congress lost, leaving Pennsylvania with no women representatives in Congress. The Democrats did well in statewide races, winning the offices of Attorney General, Treasurer, and Auditor General. Well, here to talk about what happened in Pennsylvania, we've got John Brabender joining us by telephone. He's a Republican consultant with Brabender Cox, who's worked with many Republicans, including Mike Pence, during his run for governor of Indiana. And John Brabender, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, glad to be here. It's always fun as a Republican to be here after you have a big win. It's a lot easier.
Well, we will talk to you all about that. Let me get our other guest in on the conversation, Mark Nevins, political media and communications expert with Dover Strategy Group. He served as Pennsylvania's communication director for Hillary Clinton's 2008 presidential campaign. And Mark Nevins, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
Well, do we begin with a loser or do we begin with a winner? John Brabender, let's begin with the winner. How did Donald Trump do it in Pennsylvania?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I feel like my first instinct to say, oh, I called that. Well, I did not. I mean, I said it was possible, but extremely difficult. You know, it's interesting. I wrote an article for the Wall Street Journal back in July where I said there was one path for Donald Trump, I believe, to win. When every state Romney did, when Florida and Ohio, and then I thought you had to win Pennsylvania. And frankly, a lot of people scoffed at that, brought up that it hadn't happened since 1988. But Pennsylvania, as we know, and Mark knows, is very fluid in how they vote. And we see it as how the West votes is not necessarily how the East votes. I also knew that they were probably undercounting Trump votes in a lot of the polls that were going on, and I think that turned out to be true. But there's a lot of anger in certain parts of Pennsylvania, a lot of frustration, a lot of people who feel both parties let them down. Both parties left them on the economic battlefield. And, you know, the phenomenon of Donald Trump cannot be seen by looking at Donald Trump. It's best seen by looking at his supporters. And I knew there were a lot of them in Pennsylvania, and that's why I knew that this could happen.
And I want to pick up on that. Let me turn to you, Mark. The conventional wisdom, maybe until yesterday, was if you can get a big turnout in Philadelphia and some of the collar counties around this city, which apparently we did, or the Clinton campaign did, you get a big turnout in Pittsburgh, the other big city in Pennsylvania, that you can win this state. Not true in 2016.
Well, that's most of the story. Okay. The roadmap for Democrats in Pennsylvania means that they have to win Philadelphia County big. She did that. 425,000, 450,000 vote margin for her in Philadelphia. You have to win the suburbs or at least not lose in the suburbs. She tied in Bucks County, for example. But she won in the suburbs. She added to her margin in the suburbs. You have to win in Allegheny County, where Pittsburgh is. But you also have to win up in the northeast, Scranton and Wilkes-Barre in Luzerne and Lackawanna counties. You have to win in Erie. You have to win in Dauphin County, where Harrisburg is, and Centre County. And when you put all those pieces together, what happens in the rest of the state doesn't really matter because there aren't enough votes left. But she missed what she needed to do up in the northeast. She missed Luzerne and Lackawanna County. She lost Luzerne County, whereas, and we talked about this before, I think the best comparable to the 2016 election is the 2004 election. I think with John Kerry and George W. Bush. I think Obama in 2008 and 2012 is an unfair comparison for Democrats and Republicans. He was a unique candidate. And in 2004, John Kerry won in Luzerne County. Hillary Clinton got blown out in Luzerne County. Those are the differences. And that's where those blue collar, sort of economically disadvantaged, frustrated voters that John was talking about, that's where those folks live. They live in Erie. And they live in those areas around Pittsburgh where Trump won by bigger margins than Republicans have won in the past.
John, talking about then Donald Trump's supporters, what will a President Trump be able to do for them? We know what he promised on the campaign trail to build a wall. I don't need to go. I think by now we know what he promised. What is he going to be able to deliver to them? And is there a risk of raising expectations?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, with every new president, there's hope. And hopefully between Hillary Clinton's concession speech later today and Donald Trump's speech last night, there truly will be unity. But I think there's a lot of people who really do believe that Washington is a game that's worked against them. You know, they'll hear every now and then, oh, the economy is really thriving, yet they don't seem to feel it. They see manufacturing jobs leaving here and going to Mexico, going to China, going to other places, and they don't understand why we're creating the products, but we can no longer manufacture them. And so they really feel that the American dream that was promised, where if you work hard, follow the rules, you can get ahead. They feel like there's two different sets of rules, the ones that they're forced to play by and the other ones that Washington politicians or even, you know, some degree people who are in this country illegally, they feel that they have benefits in some sense that they even don't. And I think that that's what you saw. The real wild card of why I think Trump won Pennsylvania was not sort of the gender gap with men. The surprise was how well Donald Trump did with non-college-educated women, what's often called the Walmart mom. They voted for Donald Trump in Pennsylvania in big numbers, and Hillary Clinton needed some of those votes, and they left her. And so this is a group, I think, that just feels that it's worth a chance on Donald Trump because it's not going right now the way that they want at their house.
Well, clearly, we heard Donald Trump talking about the rigged system. This is something that really resonated with voters. But Mark, it's so interesting. And while he is a quote-unquote outsider in Washington, he certainly has used the system to his advantage in the fact that he's been able to use the tax laws and apparently not paying federal income tax for years now. And yet that was seen or perhaps is seen as an example of what a good businessman he is and how he's able to work the system for himself.
Sure. Look, what was fascinating about this and the way people voted in this election, I think, is that people knew the things they didn't like about Donald Trump. They believed them and were willing to overlook them for the reasons that I think John just outlined and that you've outlined. They are so desperate to blow up the system that they are willing to overlook everything that they know about him. I mean, more people believed he was unqualified to be president than qualified to be president, and yet some of those people that believed he was unqualified to be president voted for him. And I think, you know, when we talk about healing the divide, that's a conversation that happens every time we switch parties in the White House,
right?
Every time we have this kind of shift. But what is interesting here is that this is not going to be like those previous conversations, because this is not simply Republicans and Democrats working together to figure out how they can get things done. Donald Trump ran against everybody. He ran against Democrats and Republicans. He ran against the entire establishment, which means he has to figure out how to govern now. He has the keys to the kingdom. He is in the White House. His party controls both houses of Congress. He is responsible for governing now, and he has to figure out how to do it after having alienated people from both parties.
Well, I wonder, picking up on that to you, John Brabender, I have to say to our listeners, I've got my eye on the TV set because we're waiting for Hillary Clinton to give her concession speech, and I'm told it's coming in just a couple of minutes or so. We're just kind of in a holding pattern here. But, John, looking at Donald Trump's win, not just in Pennsylvania, but the fact that he's going to be our next president, is that going to create problems for his party, the GOP?
It's going to be interesting. I honestly don't think so, for this reason. Republicans, it wasn't just Donald Trump that actually had a pretty good night last night. It was actually Republicans up and down the sort of ballot that did well. They took control, or they kept control of the Senate. They won some very big governor races that were in question. Only six members of the Republican in the House lost yesterday. And so I think there's the feeling that Donald Trump brought some of these people along. And so I think the John Kasichs and the Jeb Bushes who are on the sidelines, I think they're going to remain on the sidelines. And I think the party's going to move on without them, quite frankly.
But John, would you agree that the Republican Party has fundamentally changed at this point. I mean, this is not the Ronald Reagan Republican Party that a lot of people grew up with. This is the Donald Trump Republican Party now, and we don't know what that means because he's never really laid out a specific agenda for what direction he wants to take the party. And there are still people in the Republican Party who are Kasich loyalists or Jeb loyalists or, you know, Bush loyalists. I'm anxious to see what happens to the Republican Party now, because I think they have to figure out how to heal within their own party some of the divisions.
What do you think, John?
I think that winning changes a lot of things. If we would have lost the race, I think you would have seen so much finger pointing and so much division within the party. But now we tried it Donald Trump's way and won. And I think that he will be given the opportunity to run, you know, sort of the show. I think it's a mistake for people to think all of a sudden the party's going to change dramatically with Donald Trump in there. I think America may change with Donald Trump in there. And we can have this argument, is that for better or worse? But that's what people voted in. You know, when Donald Trump kept running primaries, people were like, I don't understand. How is he doing this? Well, it wasn't hypnosis. It was this longing for something different. It was longing for people to want to be proud to be American again. And the shock of yesterday is understanding that, you know, Donald Trump didn't do this by buying the election or spending more. He spent less. It was people rising up and saying, we want change and we're willing to bet our bet on Donald Trump.
Well,
and that's going to force some change.
Yeah,
and just picking up on that, I know you want to jump in here as well. And I mean, change, that is, you know, that is one of the more amorphous words that there is. It's a Rorschach in many ways, John, about what that change would include, what it would look like. What do you think it means?
Well, I think one of the things is it is going to be things like tougher negotiation on trade deals, not just automatically giving up things. I think that's going to be part of it. I think that economically, we are going to see about restoring manufacturing here. I think we're going to be much stronger with relationships. I mean, Putin already has put out today, it's time for America and Russia to have relations. And frankly, I'm one of the people who thinks it's crazy that we don't have stronger relationships with Russia. We have common enemies in ISIS and things like that. So I do think we are going to be seeing some shifts. I think the biggest philosophical shift is, you know, President Obama very much felt that, you know, America should not necessarily be the leader nationally or worldwide as far as the national policeman. I think Donald Trump feels that we do have a responsibility to play that role. I think that's going to be different. We'll find out if it's better or not. But I do think we're going to see some very, very distinct differences under Donald Trump. Plus, he now has the Republicans in the House and the Senate. So it's a little easier for him to get some things done, quite frankly, than it was for President Obama.
Well, we need to take a very short break. And again, watching the TV, waiting for Hillary Clinton to give her a concession speech. And to you, John, I mean, Russia might be happy, but I don't think NATO is. Talking with John Brabender, he's a Republican consultant, also with Mark Nevins, who works with Democrats, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with Mark Nevins and John Brabender about the results here in Pennsylvania, but also what the implications of Donald Trump's win, what that means nationally for the Republican Party, also for the Democratic Party. And we are waiting for Hillary Clinton to deliver her concession speech. Let me just read a couple of comments here. A comment from Sarah. Every woman lost in Pennsylvania. How much does misogyny play in this election? A tweet from John. Sad and greatly disappointed. Trump tapped into the worst of human nature, and we collectively bought it. A tweet from Watchman. 10 black people woke up and are not going to take false promises anymore. A comment from Barry. Rising health care premiums may have been a factor, too. A comment from Mac. This is exactly why Mr. Trump won. Eastern liberal elites and left coast bigots think they have a right to denigrate their fellow citizens. Pennsylvania, indeed. I don't think we're denigrating anyone on the show today, but we're looking to try to understand what this victory is about. And I'm looking here. We see Paul Ryan in our TV screen. He's talking about the fact that Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States. What do you make of that, Mark? And I want to get you in on this, John, as well.
I think that last comment is interesting because I think that taps into what people are feeling, regardless of whether people actually are economically insecure. I would argue that since 2008, people have become more economically secure. But even if their jobs have become more secure, even if they're making more now than they were before, they're not feeling it.
And it's about the gut, isn't
the,
it, in many
the
ways?
Perception becomes reality, and that's all that matters. And so for these folks who believe that they are being denigrated, who believe that they are being left behind, even if they are not being denigrated, nor are they being left behind, it doesn't matter. They're angry. They want change. And they don't care what replaces it. They just want to blow it up and force everybody to start over.
John, is it – and I talked about this in the first hour. Is it about gut in many ways? And, I mean, people know what their life is about, so they can make some kind of analysis. But is it about gut?
Well, I think that they feel that the American dream has been taken away from them. I think they worry about next year not necessarily being better than the year before. They don't see that happening. I think they do see these rising, you know, health care, what was promised to them as the Affordable Care Act, turning out to be anything but affordable. At the same time, they see in Washington a lot of people getting very wealthy playing the system. And I think that they just got to a breaking point where they were fed up, and they let the world know that with a very large megaphone. I mean, that's really what Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is simply a megaphone for a lot of people who feel like they don't have a voice, and they wanted to use that yesterday. Now, the wild card here is what Donald Trump does with it. I mean, I think he has a very short-term ability to pull America together. I think his speech last night was actually a good start. I think that there's the unknown with Donald Trump to a lot of people. I think there's misperceptions about Donald Trump. He has a short time where he can fix that, and I think it's imperative that he does.
Let me ask you, actually both of you, and again, we're just waiting for Hillary Clinton to come to the microphone there. What do you think, Mark, she both should say and will say, and you headed up her communications, you were communications director for her back in 08 here in Pennsylvania.
I think she recognizes she's been through this before. She's a professional, whether it was with Bill or in her own race. She's been through it a number of times in different states, both in 2008 and in 2016. She's won races. She's lost races. She knows what the script is. And I think she understands what her role is now in terms of trying to heal the country and trying to bring people together. I think she had some obvious differences. I'm sure she's incredibly disappointed. This was the brass ring that was out here for her.
And she got this close, right?
I mean, you know, for how long? She's been doing this for almost 10 years. So I'm certain it'll be a tough pill to swallow, but she knows what she needs to say.
And John, I'd be curious about what you think she needs to say, and whether once an election is over, it's over, and all is fair and love and war and elections.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, this does have to be remarkably difficult. I do not think in any way they were mentally prepared for this. I don't think most people were. Even if you saw the early round of exit polls yesterday, they very much favored Clinton. So this has to be a shock. I'm sure that their poll numbers were better and everything else. I think what she has to do is show, though, that she is still somebody who cares strongly about America, that she accepts what the results are, and that she still wants to be helpful, and that we are still the United States of America, and that we are indeed united. And she wants to make that the emphasis and encourage people to give Donald Trump a chance. That's frankly what I believe she should do and hope that she does.
Let me see if I can squeeze a caller on. This is Andrew calling us from Pineville. Andrew, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to say that I'm very proud of Pennsylvania, mainly because, like me, they split their ticket. They voted for issues, for candidates that had issues. Mr. Shapiro was very impressive, and we voted for him. Donald Trump spoke to us, middle America, small business people and working people, very smart people, who have been hearing about poor people and rich people and every other person except for us for too long. And it was time for us, the people that really make this country work, to have a candidate there for us. And if by the way, if it doesn't work out in 4 years, we're going to elect somebody else, because now we know we have the power to do that.
Fair enough, Andrew. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And, Mark, it is interesting that the three Democrats running for statewide office, including Josh Shapiro for attorney general, not only won, Josh Shapiro did quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all three of them for attorney general and auditor general and
treasurer,
and treasurer outperformed the top of the ticket. It is I'm not sure I can explain that part just yet. I haven't had a chance to sort of dig into the down ballot stuff. But I think it also underscores just how close this was across the board. Let's remember at this point, and I know they're still counting votes all over the country, at this point, Secretary Clinton leads the popular vote in the country. More people voted for her in the country than voted for Donald Trump, and yet he won the Electoral College. It just underscores just how deeply divided this country is between two different visions for where it needs to go.
Well, and I also think, John, because so many of these races were so close, certainly until the final results came in, just underscoring the importance of every person's vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the turnout in Pennsylvania. Do we know the answer to that, John?
I don't know. But, you know, what's fascinating to me is Pennsylvania has roughly about 800,000 more Democrats than Republicans voting. And, you know, that instantly shows you that for a Republican to win, they have to get so many crossover votes. And what they got, what Donald Trump got, were, in a sense, the sons and daughters of what we used to call Reagan Democrats. But maybe the ultimate irony was, I don't think probably Pat Toomey would have won without Donald Trump first winning Pennsylvania. And, mm-hmm. and I don't think Pat Toomey ever endorsed Donald Trump. So there's a little bit of irony in that. But, you know, so he did have an effect. But if you look at what happened in Pennsylvania, the Democrats won the down ballot statewide. I think it's because those races weren't highly profiled and people returned to what their party registration was for those. The Republicans won the, you know, contested House races in the Southeast, PA 6 and PA 8, most notably, and they won the contested state Senate race there in Delaware County. So, you know, people did split their vote. And I think that's something people should respect very much about Pennsylvanians. We're not lemons. We don't just walk in and pull one lever and walk out. People take their vote seriously enough that they're willing to vote for some Republicans and some Democrats, and I think they should be commended for that.
We were actually live last night, a special evening edition of Radio Times, and word came in that shortly after he voted, this was in the evening, that Senator Pat Toomey did vote for Donald Trump, but he waited, obviously, Mark, for the very last minute. Did Katie McGinty, I guess she had to really, in order to win, she needed Hillary Clinton to win.
That's right.
And clearly Hillary Clinton did not.
Yeah. And all of the back and forth between Senator Toomey and Katie McGinty was all necessary and good. It was a good debate. But at the end of the day, what happened at the top of the ticket really was going to determine what happened in that Senate race. And, you know, my view was that if Secretary Clinton had won Pennsylvania by 4 or 5 points, which I thought at one
That's
point
the
was
prediction.
Possible. That would be enough to carry Katie McGinty over the finish line. Clearly, that didn't happen, and I think that's what decided that election. In effect, Donald Trump was believed to be an anchor on a lot of these Republican candidates. Turned out he had coattails for
yep.
some of them.
Yep.
I mean, I'm going to guess that in Bucks County, that helped decide that election.
The 8th Congressional
yeah.
District,
mm-hmm.
giving
that's
it to,
right.
to yep. Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, to Fitzpatrick. That was a race that I thought was going to be more competitive. And in fact, the margin in that race was only vaguely different than it was in the 6th District. And there were no real resources spent on behalf of the Democrat in the 6th District, whereas in the 8th, there were quite a bit of resources expended by parties and outside interest groups and the candidates themselves, and yet the margin wasn't that different.
And, John, this was in Bucks County and one of the few competitive races across the country. Any surprise there?
Well, and for full disclosure, I was involved in that race. Brian Fitzpatrick, who was the winner, was my client. So, but I think the surprise was probably the margin of victory. And I think what Mark is saying is absolutely true, that in a sense, Donald Trump impacted these races, and he impacted them all over the country. And the advantage to that from a Donald Trump perspective is people are now going there feeling like, well, Donald Trump's helped me get here in Washington, And I think that they're going to be much more inclined to work with him versus feeling like they want to be independent from him.
But, John, do you think that there are going to be so many of them who have problems because they spoke out against Donald Trump, whether it was after that Access Hollywood tape was made public or his any of his controversial statements where Republicans felt like they had to distance themselves from him, but now he's president. They have to figure out how to work with him, and yet they've taken the time to say, I disagree with him or I have a problem with him when he says stuff like this.
John?
Yeah, and I think that's up to Donald Trump to some degree. What he has to make it clear is, look, we may not have been together in this fall election, but we've got to be together moving forward. You know, if people feel like he's taking names and keeping a list of who deserted him and there's going to be retribution for that, I think that's a huge mistake. In fact, those are the first people he should go to and say, look, we didn't agree, but now we're here together and we've got to work together.
Let me read an email from Casey. This is a bit of a mind game here. Can you ask your guests to speculate as to how a Bernie versus Donald election would have panned out from the perspective of voters who did show up versus those who would have shown up? And, you know, it's a speculation we can't really run, but nonetheless it hangs out there. Of course, knowing that Bernie Sanders was speaking in many ways to some of the same mm-hmm. anxieties mm-hmm. that some of these Trump supporters felt.
You're right. The hypothetical scenarios are very difficult to manage, very difficult to guess. But to your point, I mean, the people who turned out for Donald Trump were not necessarily turning out because he was a Republican or because of what – they were turning out because of this sort of anti-establishment message. And that was a message that Bernie Sanders was delivering. And had he been able to deliver that in a general election, that may have either swayed those voters toward him or – kept them from voting for Trump. We don't know. But you could make an argument that he would have had more success in Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. That may have been a difference maker.
And I'm looking at the TV screen here. I see Tim Kaine. We're going to hold off, I believe, for Hillary Clinton, unless someone tells me otherwise. It looks like Tim Kaine is speaking from the podium. I wonder to you, John Brabender, how much Clinton's server, the FBI investigation, the discovery of some of these emails on former Congressman Wiener's computer, how much that the sort of ick factor affected voters?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I'm not sure we're going to know the answer yet. I think there is universal agreement, Democrats and Republicans, that how the FBI handled this was probably not the right way to do it. In some sense, it seemed unfair when they did announce it. The fact that they were able to come to resolution so quickly seemed suspect on the Republican side. But I think what it did more than anything is it spoke to a larger narrative that the Clintons themselves and Washington insiders play by different rules than the rest of America. We saw that right after the FBI in July decided not to pursue the legal matter, and most Americans thought they should have. And so I think that was a cloud overhanging Hillary the entire time, and I'm sure it certainly worked to her detriment a little over a week out when the FBI announced that they were reopening the investigation, and then to quickly close it probably didn't work that much to her advantage. So, but ultimately, I don't think that was that big. I think it was already baked into the cake, if you will, about how people felt about Hillary Clinton.
Mark, do you think there was some a double standard for the baggage for both of these candidates?
Well, as we discussed, perception is reality. People were willing to give Donald Trump a pass on just about everything he said that was demonstrably false, and Hillary Clinton was labeled a liar. You know, it's an unfairness that's built into the way people perceive candidates. I think that the Comey letter that came out 10 days or so before the election, that was the second piece. If the first piece was the sort of underestimation of how powerful and how vocal those sort of white, disaffected, sort of economically insecure voters felt, the Comey letter was the second piece of that, because at that point, she was starting to pull away from Trump in a lot of places. And when that letter came out, it froze her and in some places pushed her back down closer to Trump. And at the end of the day, without that letter, I'm not sure that this result is what it was.
Oh, interesting. We have an email from Austin. Simply put, what happens next? Let me put that to you, John Brabender.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you. I mean, look, we're in uncharted territory here. You know, we have taken somebody with no political background, so there's no map to look at of a previous sort of road that they've taken or ideas or ideology. It's going to be interesting to see some of the things that Donald Trump said on the campaign trail, how practical they are to really put there. And so I think it's hard for all of us to know where to go. But you know what? That's sort of our roots as Americans. I mean, you know, we do sort of blaze trails. And I think that what is going to be very, very important is there's going to be a lot of disappointment today, a lot of groups who did not vote for Donald Trump. I think you could go as far as say there's going to be shock in the next couple of days for a lot of people in dealing that never thought this day was going to come. But I really believe if the Trump people do what they should do, the first thing they have to do is give comfort to people to say, give me a chance. Let me tell you, things that you may think about me aren't true. We have more in common than divide us. And I truly am going to represent every single citizen of this country, regardless if we agree, disagree, voted for me or not. I think it's very important that they move quickly to do that.
What do you think, Mark? What happens next?
You know, there's a scene in the movie, The Candidate with Robert Redford. After a hard-fought campaign, he's sitting in his hotel room, and his campaign manager, who's played by Peter Boyle, looks at him and says, what do we do now? Because they had just won. They hadn't planned on winning. And yet, now they have to govern. And I think that's probably a conversation that's happening in the Trump headquarters right now, where they're saying, now what do we do? And they have to figure out how to build coalitions. They have to figure out what they stand for. We know very little about what they want to accomplish. We know very little about where he wants to take his party, where he wants to take the country. The things we do know, build a wall, deport Mexican immigrants, prevent Muslims from coming into the country. He said he wants to prosecute Hillary Clinton and put her in jail. Now, is that something he can get away with not doing now that the election's over? And if he doesn't do that, does he risk alienating that base of people who voted for him, who want to see that happen? I mean, I think he's in a bit of a rock and a hard place here.
Mark Nevins, John Brabender, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll looks like we're just about to join Hillary Clinton. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And we're going now to New York City, where Hillary Clinton is giving her concession speech from the Grand Ballroom in the New Yorker Hotel.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
If you're just joining us, it's Hillary Clinton's concession speech in New York City.
Thank you so very much for being here. And I love you all, too. Last night, I congratulated Donald Trump and offered to work with him on behalf of our country. I hope that he will be a successful president for all Americans. This is not the outcome we wanted or we worked so hard for. And I'm sorry that we did not win this election for the values we share and the vision we hold for our country. But I feel pride and gratitude for this wonderful campaign that we built together, this vast, diverse, creative, unruly, energized campaign. You represent the best of America. And being your candidate has been one of the greatest honors of my life. I know how disappointed you feel because I feel it too. And so do tens of millions of Americans who invested their hopes and dreams in this effort. This is painful, and it will be for a long time. But I want you to remember this. Our campaign was never about one person or even one election. It was about the country we love and about building an America that's hopeful, inclusive, and big-hearted. We have seen that our nation is more deeply divided than we thought. But I still believe in America, and I always will. And if you do, then we must accept this result and then look to the future. Donald Trump is going to be our president. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead. Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power. And we don't just respect that, we cherish it. It also enshrines other things: the rule of law, the principle that we are all equal in rights and dignity, freedom of worship and expression. We respect and cherish these values too, and we must defend them. And let me add, our constitutional democracy demands our participation, not just every 4 years, but all the time. So let's do all we can to keep advancing the causes and values we all hold dear, making our economy work for everyone, not just those at the top, protecting our country and protecting our planet, and breaking down all the barriers that hold any American back from achieving their dreams. We've spent a year and a half bringing together millions of people from every corner of our country to say with one voice that we believe that the American dream is big enough for everyone, for people of all races and religions, for men and women, for immigrants, for LGBT people, and people with disabilities, for everyone. So now, our responsibility as citizens is to keep doing our part to build that better, stronger, fairer America we seek. And I know you will. I am so grateful to stand with all of you. I want to thank Tim Kaine and Ann Holton for being our partners on this journey. It has been a joy getting to know them better, and it gives me great hope and comfort to know that Tim will remain on the front lines of our democracy, representing Virginia in the Senate. To Barack and Michelle Obama, our country owes you an enormous debt of gratitude. We thank you for your graceful, determined leadership that has meant so much to so many Americans and people across the world. And to Bill and Chelsea, Mark, Charlotte, Aiden, our brothers and our entire family, my love for you means more than I can ever express. You crisscrossed this country on our behalf and lifted me up when I needed it most, even four-month-old Aiden, who traveled with his mom. I will always be grateful to the creative, talented, dedicated men and women at our headquarters in Brooklyn and across our country. You poured your hearts into this campaign. For some of you who are veterans, it was a campaign after you had done other campaigns. Some of you, it was your first campaign. I want each of you to know that you were the best campaign anybody could have ever expected or wanted. And to the millions of volunteers, community leaders, activists, and union organizers who knocked on doors, talked to neighbors, posted on Facebook, even in secret private Facebook sites. I want everybody coming out from behind that and make sure your voices are heard going forward. To everyone who sent in contributions as small as $5 and kept us going, thank you. Thank you from all of us. And to the young people in particular, I hope you will hear this. I have, as Tim said, spent my entire adult life fighting for what I believe in. I've had successes and I've had setbacks, sometimes really painful ones. Many of you are at the beginning of your professional, public, and political careers. You will have successes and setbacks, too. This loss hurts, but please never stop believing that fighting for what's right is worth it. To keep up these fights now and for the rest of your lives. And to all the women, and especially the young women, who put their faith in this campaign and in me, I want you to know that nothing has made me prouder than to be your champion. I know we have still not shattered that highest and hardest glass ceiling, but someday someone will, and hopefully sooner than we might think right now. And to all the little girls who are watching this, never doubt that you are valuable and powerful and deserving of every chance and opportunity in the world to pursue and achieve your own dreams. Finally, I am so grateful for our country and for all it has given to me. I count my blessings every single day that I am an American. And I still believe, as deeply as I ever have, that if we stand together and work together with respect for our differences, strength in our convictions, and love for this nation, our best days are still ahead of us. Because, you know, I believe we are stronger together and we will go forward together. And you should never, ever regret fighting for that. You know, Scripture tells us, let us not grow weary in doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. So, my friends, let us have faith in each other. Let us not grow weary. Let us not lose heart. For there are more seasons to come, and there is more work to do. I am incredibly honored and grateful to have had this chance to represent all of you in this consequential election. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
An emotional Hillary Clinton thanking her supporters at the New Yorker Hotel. She shared the fact that she was disappointed like them. She said this election was never about one person or one election, about the country that we love. She said she still believes in America and that we must all accept the result that Donald Trump is our new president. Have an open mind, give him a chance to lead. And she talked about cherishing the peaceful transfer of power. Well, Scott Wong has been listening along with a senior staff writer for The Hill. And Scott, thanks for your patience. And how do you think this speech will play in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think one of the most powerful messages from the speech was her when she addressed the young women who had been working on her campaign, and also the little girls, telling them that they are powerful and that they can be anything that they want and they should dream big. They should dream big. Obviously, it was a very tasteful and conciliatory speech, but also touched on the fact that her opponent in the campaign, had been under fire for the way that he had talked about women, things that he had bragged about doing, you know, in terms of kissing and groping women. So it was a positive speech. It was a powerful speech, but at the same time, I think she's expressing a lot of the disappointment from Democrats today.
Well, I saw Paul Ryan earlier. I know you cover the House Republican leadership on Capitol Hill. What does a President Trump mean for the Republican leadership like Paul Ryan?
Well, this morning, as Republicans are waking up to news that Donald Trump is president, they are divided over the issue. You have many Republicans who were in the Trump camp that are exuberant over the outcome. They are, you know, lining up jobs in the transition and the administration. They're talking about rolling back Obama's policies of the past 8 years, whether that's regulations. Certainly they're excited to be able to appoint a new Supreme Court justice to replace the late Antonin Scalia that will have impacts for a generation. At the same time, there are establishment Republicans that are really beside themselves. I was at a watch party last night before the polls came in, and Republicans were coming up to me saying they were ready for a Hillary Clinton tidal wave, really. They really thought that she was just going to run the table on Republicans, and they were bracing for losses in the House and prepared for the Senate to flip. And it was the exact opposite, and a lot of people are just woke up this morning completely stunned.
And, Scott, we're almost out of time here. Does this put the Affordable Care Act on the chopping block?
I think everything is on the table. President Obama's entire legacy from the past 8 years is on the table. And, as I said, we're already hearing from Republicans saying the first thing they want to do is roll back the president's agenda and roll back the president's policies from the last 8 years. So I very much think that Obamacare is a top target for Republicans.
And we know, of course, how many times did the House vote to undo the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, dozens of times, and it never really mattered because they had President Obama in the White House with a veto pen ready. The law, bore his name, and he was not going to let anything happen to that. Now, with a President Trump in the White House, we can be sure that Obamacare will be one of their top priorities to tackle.
Scott Wong, thank you so much, and thank you for your patience for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Senior staff writer for The Hill. That's it for today's edition of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out much more about the program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, Liz Fiedler, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us.